Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Hey, good morning. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, All Things Legal. Give us a call at 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. Albert Nico this morning. Good morning, Albert.
Hey, Doug. What's up, man?
Tigers. That's what's up. Cardiac kids.
Cardiac kids. I've been saying it all season. I mean, they just can't. They can't put anybody away. They won about five games. Actually, didn't win five. They lost to Auburn, but they won maybe four games, down 16 or 18 points, coming back and winning at the end. And then they do the other thing. They're up 10 or 15, and they let them back in the game, much like they did with Maryland. So they got to learn how to put teams away, or are they going to have trouble in these next few games?
Well, yes, you're right. They, I mean, it is.
You got a team beat. You got to keep the pedal down.
They won.
I'll take a win. And, you know, the good news is, unlike the Pelicans, they have a knack for winning games, close games at the end. You know, they lost two, one to Florida, one to Auburn during the season. But otherwise, they really, you know, they beat Kentucky at the buzzer. I mean, they beat a lot of teams close to get where they are. And, you know, so the good news is they know how to win. But they really need to know how to put people away and that where it's, you know, 6-7, 8-point game at the end and they're at the free throw line making the lead bigger.
Well, I guess for LSU, and you're talking X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, I think they won five overtime games or somewhere
seven.
Around seven. Seven overtime games.
They were in seven. Yeah, they lost one.
And lost one. And in a lot of the other games like Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky were very close. I believe, you know, I said this before, if you have a great point guard in that last possession, it is a great, great benefit because it just seems like if you have a great point guard, you win those type of games because you can go penetrate. You can either penetrate and do what Tremont did yesterday, make the shot, penetrate and dish, mm-hmm. or penetrate and miss the shot, draw the big man to you, and you get the easy tip like the Kentucky game.
Or you miss the shot and go into overtime. So
right.
They did the right thing. I mean, they at the end of the game, no question about it. And that's what they should have done in some other games. You know, when they lost to Auburn, Tremont, you know, tries to throw an alley-oop with 30 seconds left to play when you're winning the game. And Auburn came down, made a three, and beat him. So, you know, he's had some bad games where he, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to remember what the other game was, where they had about, you know, 6-7 seconds left and he bombs a...
Probably Florida.
It was the Florida game where he bombed this, you know, beyond pro three. Actually, there were 13 seconds left. And he just, you know, so, and I think that's when Wade kind of benched him and said, look, you know, you got to learn how to do this right. And, you know, lo and behold, he did it right in the game. So, anyway, we actually have a sports question, Doug, if you want to take that.
We got
a sports law question.
Sports law question. All right, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Justin. Hey, Justin, you're in All Things Legal with Doug Sinceri and Albert Nico.
Good morning, Doug and Albert. I have to admit that I had to come up with this question just to give me an excuse to call you and say hello.
All right. There you go. There you go.
I love your show. My question is let's use the New Orleans Saints and Dez Bryant as an example. Are the Saints legally bound to take care of his medical expenses, or can they just release him and let him fend for himself?
Well, actually, what they have is they would have to take care of their medical expenses related to football. Now, not necessarily for non-related football injuries. Now, what they do, they used to have this. I'm not sure if they had it anymore when I was in it. They had something called injury protection that if...
Much like workers' comp, where they
This is a benefit that was negotiated in by the Players Association.
Mm-hmm.
What it says is if you sustained a football-related injury in the last year of your contract, the next year you could get a benefit. I think it was $150,000 or $250,000 if you couldn't play because of a physical, because of football-related injury. So
right,
was called
but that would
protection.
Just be like a buyout, but wouldn't have anything to do with related medical treatment. So if there,
right,
yeah,
so
but,
he,
but,
he,
but the
so
team, but the, yeah, but the team would be responsible for it.
They'd be responsible for both.
All right, so if he tears the ACL,
yes.
That's a football-related injury. But if he gets in a car accident on his own, they're not responsible.
No, they're not. So, but
that's all I need to know.
All right. Thanks for the call, Justin. Yeah,
like Ricky Jackson, when he got in his car accident, he got some pliers and you know, unwired his jaw so he could play in the next week's game, put a helmet on.
That was back when men were men. I remember Dick Nolan was telling us a story. The old Saints coach.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
He was called Mute Rockne because he was very soft-spoken. His son actually is the linebackers coach for the Saints right now, Mike Nolan.
Right.
And he played on the New York Giants as a player coach. His two coordinators on that team was Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi. Now,
wow.
You think about that.
Pretty good pedigree.
And when they were rivals, they coached together at the Giants. Vince had the Lombardi had the offense, Landry had the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they said was when Dick Nolan had a separated shoulder during a game, what they told him to do is to lie on his back, and the trainer, whose name was probably Sparky or something,
mm-hmm.
told him to lie down, and he stepped on his shoulder and put it back into place and told him to go back run out there.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They don't show this anymore. But they showed this with the Saints. And I think it was with Davey Witzel and maybe some of the other players. It was on NFL films. But they don't show it anymore, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But when the Saints players used to come to the sideline.
Oh, they'd smoke and drink.
They'd smoke.
Oh, yeah.
They showed. Yeah. I don't know if it was Dave Witzel. They mm-hmm. have a cigarette. And then it's time for the defense to go out. And so he takes the cigarette, stomps out in the ground, goes running out.
Right. Well, there was remember Art Donovan, the old.
He was on Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson all the time. He told a quick story about, and I'll tell it quickly. We got some calls, but he told a story about Johnny Unitas. And again, you know, back in the day when men were men, he said it was a sloppy game. There was mud on the field, and Unitas is driving us down for the winning drive. And he said the name of the defensive lineman came, and he punched. He was able to get his hand under the helmet, and he punched Unitas right in the nose.
Yeah.
And he said blood was pouring out. He broke his nose. And so the coaches sent an Earl Morrill on the field, and he's waving him off. And he said he reached down. Unitas reached down and grabbed a handful of mud that was on the field and packed his nose with it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, he packed his nose with it, came down and threw the winning touchdown pass. He said it back in the day when men were men. Of course, none of them can walk anymore.
That's right.
You want to take a call?
All right, let's go to phone calls. Let's go to Packers. Got a question regarding contract law. Hey, Patrick, you on All Things League with Doug Sinceri and Albert Nico.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my calls. So I'm a general contractor and a property owner.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of wanted to talk about these liens and on that level. So can you talk about the first question I have as an owner?
Right.
And someone puts a lien that I disagree with. How do I get it off? How do I contest it? Then the second part, I can come back to the second part after you answer.
Okay.
That.
Well, it depends on if the lien is valid. And we see it all the time that very many people, very many lawyers are unfamiliar with the Private Works Act and generally will screw it up and not properly file the lien. Liens, because they interrupt and put an impingement on immovable property and commerce, they're strictly construed, which means that if you're going to file a lien, you have to follow the letter of the law. And if you don't, then the other side of the person, the owner, can file a writ with the recorder of mortgage to writ of mandamus to have them remove the lien. And you, the person filing the lien, would have to show up and prove that the lien was correct.
Do they do that in court, or do they do that with the if you file a writ of mandamus?
Yeah, you would
do
that.
Is it sort of like a petition or something like
that?
Yeah,
you would do that with the court, and you would explain, you know, if you want to bring it to us, we can take a look at it and make sure that it was properly filed. One of the things there are a number of things you have to do. You have to do a property description, and not just a municipal address. You have to itemize your damages. Like, you know, you can't just say, oh, they owe $12,000. You have to itemize that $12,000 to you know, reasonably itemize it so they'll know exactly what the debt is for.
I guess my general question, let's assume the guy does everything right, but we still disagree. Like, he says that I owed him $4,000 for this flooring, but I really only owe you $2,000, or I don't owe you $4,000 because I paid you for that. How do we deal with that? The same way?
If you've paid him, then you can go ahead and bring that claim to have the lien removed. And then, you know, you can either file a petition to have the lien removed, or, excuse me, I got a little congestion. Or he's got to file something within a year of filing that lien. He's got to file a petition to enforce that lien. If he doesn't do it within a year of filing, then he's out. You can come in and just have it summarily removed. So one or the other, but no, you would have to go bring it before a court with a hearing to show whether or not that lien is proper.
And then I guess on the flip side, I had this one time, and I want to know if it's still applicable.
Mm-hmm.
You spoke several times on your show before about filing your lien at the right time.
Correct.
And if you could kind of walk through that, if I did not file it at the right time, but I filed it anyway, I don't know if the guy would know that it's not a valid lien, or is it not a valid lien unless he contested to say, hey, you didn't file it at the right time.
Okay, well, it's either a valid lien or it's not. So if it's not a valid lien and it wasn't timely, then no, it's not valid. It will stay on the property, again, until you file suit to enforce it. If you file suit to enforce the lien, then he can come along and say, well, the lien wasn't proper. In that case, if you know you didn't file it timely and you know it wasn't properly filed, you could just file a petition against that homeowner saying you owe me X amount of dollars.
Like a regular lawsuit, just not under the Private Works Act.
Well, but yeah, correct, because all a lien really does, it is a privilege against that property, meaning that they can't sell that property or otherwise transfer it without satisfying that lien. And so all that lien does is protect an asset of theirs. It's almost like, you know, collateral, right, that you're getting by putting this lien on the property to substantiate your claim. And so when you file that lien, it protects that asset from being transferred and gives you that opportunity to seize and sell it. Now, the reality of it is there's going to be a mortgage probably on the property or some sort of bank loan or whatever. And so that's an issue. But the banks don't like to have those on there. So if it's a construction loan, they're going to make sure that these get taken care of.
Now, when you say timely, can you kind of walk me through that? I filed it as a contractor.
Pat,
after we completed the work, not when I got the contract.
Pat, right. Can you hold on, and we'll address that on the other side of the commercial?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right, hold on. Patrick, we'll be right back on All Things Legal after this brief timeout. All right, we're back. We're with Patrick. He's got some more follow-up questions on construction liens, and we got our guru, Albert. So what you got? You want to finish up your question, Patrick?
Yes. Thank you for coming back to me.
Sure.
Let me ask you the scope of the work, Patrick, the scope of the work that you did. Was it like a complete renovation, or was it just, you know, painting, or was it what did you do on this particular project?
I gutted it all the way to the frame, and we came back with the flooring, sheetrock. I mean, we kind of really redid it, and I subbed out the electrical work.
Okay. So if what you have to do, and I think, you know, you're aware of this because we talked about this before, if you're the general contractor on the job, which you would have been in that situation, you have to file what's called a notice of contract with the parish in which the property is located. And that notice of contract has to be done before any work is done on the project. And once that's filed, and if the you know, the project price is above $25,000. If it's above $25,000, you have to file that. If that's filed, then that protects your lien. And once you reach substantial completion to where, you know, they either get a certificate of occupancy or move into it and use it for its purposes, then you have 30 days from that date to file a lien. If you're a subcontractor and the notice of contract is properly filed, you only have 30 days to file from substantial completion. If a notice of contract isn't filed and you're a subcontractor, you have 60 days to file. So, but if you don't file one, now, you know, there are a couple of exceptions if you're a general contractor. If you performed actual work yourself and did labor and paid your own employees, you may be able to collect for that labor. But, you know, and if you purchased materials to go to the project, you may be able to do that as well. So there are a couple of exceptions. There's a case or two that allow that, but they're very rare. Again, you still would have a cause of action for a lawsuit against them for the amount due.
All right, Patrick, thanks for
the call. Thank you for the call.
We got to go to a CBS News update, local news. We'll be back for our second half an hour of our first hour of All Things Legal. We're going to be on until 10:30 today. LSU and Georgia, game three, pregame at 10:30, first pitch at 11. So stay tuned for another 2 hours of All Things Legal. We'll see you in a couple of minutes. Hey, we're back. Dex and Terry, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, All Things Legal. Let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Angelo. He's got a question regarding liability for a car accident. Hey, Angelo, you and All Things Legal, Doug Sincere and Albert Nico.
Good morning, gentlemen. Got a question about liability as a driver of a vehicle in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
If an employee is driving an employer's vehicle in the line of work, a UPS driver or whatever, and it gets in an accident and there was found to be faulty brakes on the vehicle. He gets a ticket. The driver pays the ticket because he rear-ended someone. But it's regarding liability for that accident. Is the driver liable for any damages? The reason the employer is self-insured for $200,000 and just doesn't want to pay the injured party. So the injured party is suing the driver and the employer.
Right.
Well, the employer's not doing anything about it, so the driver's, you know, got a lot of anxiety.
Right. Well, the driver, yes, the driver will have liability. The driver is the operator of the vehicle. However, there's something called respondeat superior, which means that you as an employer are liable for damages caused by your employee. And especially if it's faulty brakes, you are liable for things in your possession and control, meaning your vehicle. So, you know, the faulty brakes could be traced back to some repair shop if they were brought to a repair shop and not prepared repaired properly. So, I mean, there's a lot of fish swimming around in the tank that you can kind of go after in terms of the liability. But at the end of the day, the driver was the driver. And the driver, you know, can be sued and is at fault. Now, quite often, the driver is sued to keep this case from going to federal court. A lot of people would rather a state court than a state court trial or jury as opposed to the federal courts. And if you sue a person that lives within the state, you destroy diversity jurisdiction, and so you're unable to proceed in federal court unless there's some federal question, which typical automobile accidents don't involve. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Now, the problem, too, is with the driver, if the driver is in the course and scope of his employment, chances are he will likely not be covered by his personal insurance company, because if it's some sort of business related purpose or he's in the course and scope of his employment. So basically they'll either make that policy or that liability first, and then secondly would be able to go after your insurer or the insurer of the driver.
Well, the driver's a foreign worker who's here on a guest worker visa.
So if you file suit against this person, it's going to be tough to collect. So the lawyer is going to do everything he can to hold the business liable. And if they're self-insured, that, they're probably going to put up a stronger defense. They're not going to, they're not going to just roll over and say, okay, we've got, 40,000 claims this month because we're this major insurance company, and we're going to just go ahead and try to settle this one for this and this one for this. This is it's a self-insured thing. And so, they're going to probably put up a bigger defense because it's not the insurance company's money. It's their money.
Right, correct. Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the info.
Okay, Angelo.
All right, thanks for the call. So could you explain the difference as far as what the $200,000 retention is and why it may be a little more resistance?
Right, because if I'm a business and, I'm Joe's Truck Service, and I've got an employee that gets in an accident, and 100% of that, of the liability is covered by a liability insurance company, then you turn it over to your insurance company. They investigate it. They do what they do. They even hire lawyers. They pay the claim. If you have an SIR, self-insured retention, that means that the first $200,000 in this case, of any liability, you're going to pay yourself. And companies will do that because it makes their liability coverage that much cheaper, because the liability carrier knows that it's going to be excess to $200,000. So the first $200,000 in an accident, which 90% of the accidents that will cover, they're not going to have to pay for. They're only just going to have to pay for really big ones. So the company saves a bunch of money by having a higher SIR, but it's their money. So they put money in reserve for accidents, and they've got a formula for kind of making sure they've got to register with the state once it's above a certain amount and make sure that they have that money on reserve to pay claims.
Now, you used a big word, respondeat superior.
Mm-hmm.
For us people who grew up in Bucktown, that
well,
means
that basically
your
means
employer takes over for your liability.
It means the employer is liable for the acts of its employee.
There you go.
When you want to bring that company in.
Do you want to say anything about uninsured motorist coverage when you
talk
about this?
Well, we can definitely do that.
All right. Well, let's go to a break. Doug Cesari, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. All right, we're back. Doug Cesari, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be on till 10:30 because LSU plays Georgia in a rubber game at 11 o'clock in baseball. LSU won the first game, 1-0. Great game. Ryan Hess pitched 7 innings. Just phenomenal game. They lost yesterday 2-0. Cole Henry pitched 7 innings, great, but the bats are cold, but they're still 1-1, so they can take the series. Georgia's number 5 in the nation. So, on the road.
Is LSU ranked still?
Yeah, I think they're ranked about, I think they're in the top 10, 11th. 11th, yeah, 11th. Yeah. So, but Georgia's a great test. Sort of, as a baseline from Texas, and we have a chance to win the series, and so we'll see.
You brought up a good point. A couple of weeks ago, we're talking about Maneri and how he does things, and it's not his intention to win every game during the season,
especially the midweek games.
That he just wants to jiggle with the lineup, the pitching lineup, who pitches best in this situation, and even if he loses the game, he knows that he's got a lot of games to play.
Pre-SEC, he does that, and midweek games, he'll experiment, he'll move things in and out. It's more important for him to be prepared for the playoff run, Super Regionals, and World Series than it is to win that midweek game, even though he wants to do both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the luxury of being at LSU. is you can do that. You don't have to win every game to keep your job.
Yeah.
Because he's gonna win a share, but he's it'll be a good test today. The pitching's we're deep in pitching.
Mm-hmm.
Our bats are we're having a little problem in the 7, 8, 9 slot of the order.
Mm-hmm.
Those bats need to get a little, that's got to be clarified. And but they did the last two games of Kentucky last week. The bats came alive and they just really put it to them. But Georgia's probably going to be in the World Series or in a Super Regional for sure. And our Tigers basketball just gutsy. They're just gutsy. And Skylar Mays, that three-pointer, that had to be from 30. That was about 28 footer.
Yeah, that was quite a
shot. I mean,
when
you saw him square up, and it was contested.
Now, will he play next year? He's a junior this year.
He's a 4-0 student, pre-med student.
That's what I'm saying. So I wouldn't see any reason why he would not play. He's still going to be in school.
He's one guy who could do better almost not going to the NBA, probably do better vocationally.
Right.
Becoming a
not
doctor.
Not necessarily financially.
Well, even in the long term, he could probably.
Well,
but God bless him. But he is good enough to play in the NBA.
They're paying some big money to basketball players.
And, it's such a weird thing because I keep waiting for that point in the game where they say, you know what, we miss Will Wade. That point where they just fold or collapse or the knees mm-hmm. buckle. And they got, when Maryland came back, took a 2-point lead.
Right.
They
win close games more often than not, but it's just they shouldn't be in that many close games is my point.
Well, the NCAA tournament,
happened all season.
Now, here's another thing.
It happened all season.
Here's another thing I noticed about the NCAA tournament. The 3-point shooting is way down for most teams generally. And I think the reason why is because there's a unique pressure to being one and done. I mean, you had in other games.
I watched a couple of games where it was a 3-point shootout. I mean, Auburn was back and forth.
I'm saying, generally,
for the most part, yeah.
For Maryland was very cold for about 30 minutes from the mm-hmm. 3-point line. LSU's been cold.
Right. Wofford.
Wofford's been cold.
And McGee's more 3-point shots. NCAA history.
Iona, which is a small college out of White Plains, New York. It's like Loyola University, about mm-hmm. the same size. They were 10 for 21 in the first half, and they were close. They were winning, actually, against mm-hmm. North Carolina. And then when the pressure of the second half, they were a 16 seed, came. That three-pointer just...
Yeah, and a lot of that is just basketball. I mean, basketball is a very streaky thing. It's why you call timeout to get somebody who's kind of hot and feeling it, you cool them off a little bit. And it's very common that you have a series of a number of shots in a row, and then they go cold and not so consistent.
Now, one thing that is keeping LSU in the games is their defense. Their defense is relentless. Because if you play good defense, you'll always be in it because your shot's going to come and go, mm-hmm. as you say. But
I disagree. I think their defense has been suspect.
I don't know.
They've been scoring. They allow 60, 70, 80 points a game sometimes. They're letting a lot of people score a lot of points on them.
I think against Maryland, they generally did well. This is an ACC team. I mean, they played
Oh,
Dukes.
No. They had some really good players.
Now, one,
and I got to tell you, I don't think Tyler Mays goes to the next
Skylar
level.
Skylar Mays,
if he
wants to, I think.
I doubt it. No. He's a defensive liability. His feet are too heavy. He's not going to – he can't guard anybody. If you watch it, the guard, when he was out, they put his player –
Man, you tough. Man,
the guy's a great player. He's a great shooter. He's a great leader, a great kid. But on defense, his feet are heavy. When they'll do the switch and put the guard out on the wing and where he's got to guard that guy, and he blows past him pretty much every time.
Do you know Garrett Temple, who played in the 06 – a Final Four, still mm-hmm. in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
11 years, I think. You know why he plays? What's between his ears.
Oh, Jimmer Fredette made it, right? Jimmer Fredette.
Not for long.
Well, not for long, but he couldn't play defense. He was too slow.
I know.
Anyway.
But one thing,
you got to be quick and athletic.
Before we go to break and we go back to legal, LSU's eight top eight players are as good as anyone in the nation from 1 to 8. Now, I'm not saying they're 1, 2, 3 is better than anyone in the nation, mm-hmm. but overall 1 to 8.
No, they can win this.
They are comparable. They have the talent to win this. Right.
They have a loss in the SEC tournament. If they win the tournament, they're a one seed. So they're as good as anybody out there.
I think the moment – now they had that moment against Maryland when they came to crunch time. They were without their coach, and they hung in there and did it. They're going to have a couple of more – they're going to have another crunch time like this against Michigan State where they're going to either be leading and they have a run. Do they fold or hang tough, or do they get way behind and able to come
back?
To
their credit, they win close games in that for the most part.
We'll see. We'll see the effect without their coach.
Mm-hmm.
But are they able to,
to
use
rally.
That? Yeah, to rally. So that's the question. All right, well, let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to a text. Of course, it's not a tree, but it's a neighbor dispute. Can someone tell us who owns the adjoining fence between me and my neighbor? He seems to think he owns it, but I'm stuck with the work on it.
Well, if you're lucky, whoever put that fence up got a permit to do it, and so they paid to do it. You can always get a survey, and if the survey shows that the fence is more on your side of the property line or, 6 inches into the property line, you may have the right to have that person remove the fence if push comes to shove. If it is a common fence, you can always ask the neighbor to help you with, repairs, et cetera, which it sounds like that person doesn't want to do. Who owns the fence? It depends on who put it up. And if that person said he put it up, then he's responsible for the repairs. You may want to get permission to put up some rails on your side of the fence and put, if it's a wooden fence, depending on the type of fence, it's hard to.
If it's a common fence.
It's not really a common fence. I mean, whoever installed the fence owns the fence.
Okay.
And so, that might be on the property line. So,
right. So if it's on a property line, is there any distinction?
Not really. I mean, if it's on the property line, then you would, maybe have the right to attach a fence or put a fence right up and butt it right up next to it and have your own fence. For instance, if it's a wooden fence, or, talk to the person and say, look, you're not keeping, assume it's a wooden fence, it's falling apart. You can say, hey, look, I want to be able to use your poles and put some stringers on my side and put fence boards on my side of the fence. And then you can do what you want after that. And, your fence can deteriorate and look terrible, and I'll keep my fence in good repair.
Well, can you put a fence on the property line and ask for your neighbor to contribute to the cost of the installation
you can,
of fence?
You can, but they don't have to contribute to it.
They don't have to.
They're not required to contribute to it. You can also come back 3 inches and just put it there, and then they won't have any say-so.
They won't have any say-so. All right. There you go. Neighbor question. At least it wasn't a tree. We hadn't had a tree question in about a week.
Yeah, don't remind everybody.
So, all right. Well, we're going to our first break. We're going to national news, local news, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes and all things legal. So stay tuned. We'll be on till 10:30 leading up to the LSU pregame.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no. I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.